This meeting will come to order here on February 8th, 2022.
Now, we're going to pause for our invocation, which will be proceeded immediately and then proceed immediately into the Pledge of Allegiance. Our invocation.
Talking to Mike.
We will pause for our invocation and then proceed immediately into the Pledge of Allegiance. Now we're doing our invocation.
Mr. Noah, what do you do?
Once again, meet the veteran of this community as a whole for his decisions here today would be for the best interest of everyone involved in this community. And I pray that you will be with the ones who aren't here who may be sick, that you would heal them. Hold us fast in that name, amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we get started, I want to welcome our new commissioner, Mr. Jeff Natrico, to the commission. And great to have you and look forward to your input.
Thank you.
Your service to our community. Thank you. And Ms. Laureen Bowles, thank you for being here today. Nice to see you and the city manager, Mr. Melder, and our county manager, Mr. Lee Smith.
All right. Thank you. The Metropolitan Planning Commission is holding a virtual and in-person meeting in an effort to be compliant with local and state regulations regarding social distancing and to maintain the health, safety, and welfare of all involved in these public meetings. For staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation and there are no known objections. This will be followed by the regular business, old business, and adjournment. For each agenda item on regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will be followed by a presentation by the petitioner should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for public comment. If you wish to comment on the item that the board is considering at the time, use the raise your hand feature on the screen. Do not use the feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you will be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item if you want to speak on a petition. Once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you are not certain you want to speak, still use the raise your hand feature. If you will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal. Then additional needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. We also, for those in the audience, have blue cards. If you want to speak on a topic, please fill out a blue card and get it to the ladies over there and they'll make sure we get it.
And I ask that the commissioners, when you want to ask a question, please state your name for the record. And those on the computer, please do as well. All right, we'll start with the approval of the agenda. I need a motion.
Motion to approve.
Cole, second.
We'll do a verbal vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone against? Next is notice, proclamations, and acknowledgments. We don't have to vote on this, but March 1st, 2022 will be our regular MPC meeting here at 1:30. And item five is items to be requested to be removed, a special use approval request, 2110 West Gwinnett Street. I need a motion.
Motion.
Second, Coles.
Verbal count, all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone against? If there's anybody here in the audience on that item, we will not be having that today, okay? That was for the 2110 West Gwinnett Street. Items for requested to be withdrawn. We don't have any. Consent agenda, approval of the January 18, 2022 briefing regular minutes meeting. Need a vote to approve that.
Motion to approve.
Coles, second.
Verbal count, all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone against? Thank you. There is no old business. Now we're going to get into the regular business. Item number five, rezoning request, 5659 Ageechee Road. Thank you. Make sure your mic's on.
Nope, there we go. All right. So our first item is 5659 Ageechee Road. There we go.
Thank you, Karen.
All right, so just to locate us first, this is on Ageechee Road, north of the Berwick Plaza where the Kroger is and the apartments down here. Up to the north is where the intersection with Dean Forest Road is. So this is a little bit down here south of that. Zoom in a little bit closer. This is going to be consisting of three properties, the proposed rezoning. Let's see here. So currently the properties are zoned AT for agricultural tourists and RA residential agriculture. You know, the AT is in the front, RA is in the back here. They're proposing to rezone all three of these whole properties to B for business, which is the county's highest commercial zoning. Next door, we have some light industrial. We have the PUD across the street, which is the sort of the large PUD that consists of the Kroger and, you know, all the shops in that plaza, as well as the apartments back there. There is a planned multifamily development for this area across the street. Let's see. So the intended use of the property is to, let's see here, to use the area in the back here and a little bit around this area to create a gravel lot, have trucks come in, basically a truck terminal, but they could leave chassis, containers, things like that there overnight as a commercial service. So this is the only curb cut for these two properties is right here, which leads into this lot. There we go. So this is the building that you can see on the map right here on the top, right here. This is the back of the property, which is the area where, you know, the gravel might go down and where the trucks might be. And you can see this area is fenced off here, but basically the area here would be where the trucks would enter. Most likely come around to the back here. I'm sure the applicant can describe that a little bit better and park around there. So there is, we've noted, an existing traffic issue in this corridor here on Ageechee Road. There is a median right here as well as, you know, it's kind of a narrow two lanes right here. There is a pretty bad traffic problem at rush hours. And we have concerns about an 18-wheeler coming in and out of this property. It's a pretty tight turn and would block the road pretty substantially. This is just like a right-in, right-out kind of a turn here. Let's see. So other uses for the B zoning that could be, like this property could potentially be used for, might be a restaurant, gas station, motel, auto service stations, retail. As I said, this is sort of the highest commercial zoning in the county. So pretty much any of those things like could potentially go there in the future if this rezoning were to be approved. So with all that said, we are recommending disapproval of this, mostly because of the traffic issues, the small access point into and out of the property, and the effects that other uses in the B zoning could have even greater problems on there. It's probably also worth noting that this area has been sort of slowly transitioning to these kinds of industrial, light industrial uses up along this corridor here. There's a lot of, you know, cars lying about, shipping containers, things like that out on the road. Yeah, as I said, we are recommending denial for this, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is the petitioner here?
Yes.
I'm going to ask he or she to come forward and state your name for the record. Before we ask questions, always ask the petitioner to come up next, okay? Then we can ask staff and the petitioner questions and kind of get two birds at one time. Go ahead, sir, and state your name for the record, and you have 20 minutes, if that's the time you need.
My name is Patel Rashmikant, and I don't know what to say because I was not prepared to, you know, somebody's going to have that. So if this comes to the point, I will have, you know, look forward into it and talk to my attorney or anything I need to do in order to understand the whole situation.
Okay, sir. Does anybody, any commissioner here have a question for Mr. Patel or staff? And if you're on your computer, raise your hand if you're a commissioner, and so we can recognize you.
Chair.
Yes.
I wanted to make a comment. I was incorrect in the pre-meeting about the location of this. I'm fully aware of where this is now.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Noah. Is anybody on the computer? Yes, we do have one. Thank you very much. We have Marie Lee online. Please state your name for the record. And you have 3 minutes. You may need to unmute your computer, your mic, Ms. Lee. She's still there? Marie Lee? All right, we'll move forward. Anybody else? Is there anyone in the audience wishes to come forward that turn in a blue card to have a question on this item on the Geechee Road? If not, okay, nope. Then I will. Yes, Mr. Coles.
I just have one question. So you said you have an attorney and you haven't spoken to him about this, or?
No, because this is something that I didn't expect to, you know, I just came in to see what needs to be done in order to do that. So
okay.
I didn't follow up on that. Yeah.
So you understand that the hearing today is to make a recommendation for rezoning. Did you want to discuss this with your attorney before we move on that?
Yeah.
Would you like to talk to him? We can table this to next month.
Sure. We can do that. Please.
Okay. Make a motion.
Move to table this until the next regular scheduled meeting.
Cole, second.
Now it'll be March the 1st, sir. So please get with your attorney, come prepared, and
yes, sir.
Let us know what it's all about. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. We need to have a vote. I'll go down the line. Marine Bowles, how do you vote?
Yes.
Travis Coles?
Yes.
Elizabeth Epstein?
Yes.
Did you reply?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
You. Now I can. Joseph Urban?
Yes.
Ms. Karen Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Jay Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Wayne Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Dwayne Stevens?
Yes.
Yes.
Dr. Watkins? Not here. Mr. Woodwitty?
Yes.
Mr. Welch, yes. Motion passes. Table that to next month. Now we go to the next item, number six, rezoning map amendment, Sweetwater Station and Clubhouse Drive. Mr. Lotson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next item on our agenda is a request to rezone property within the Sweetwater Station subdivision. The subject property is approximately 12 acres in size, and the petitioner is requesting to rezone the property from the RACO, which is a residential agricultural annexed zoning classification, to the RSF5, which is a single family residential classification within the city of Savannah. In September of last year, the applicant requested to rezone this same property to the RSF4 designation. That would have allowed for smaller lots than any that exist within the subdivision. Staff at the time was recommending denial of that petition. It was never ruled on by the Planning Commission, but in discussions with the applicant, they made the decision to go back and revise their plan. They did so and resubmitted under the current application. This is a vicinity map that shows the subject property. You can see, let me zoom in a little here. Highway 204 here, Grove Point Road, which is adjacent to the subject property. All the property you see within these boundaries are part of the Sweetwater subdivision. The subdivision is a single family detached residential subdivision. It was approved originally consistent with the master plan in 2005. The majority of the master planned area is zoned RSF6, and some of two other portions of the property is zoned RSF5 currently, and the petitioner is requesting to rezone this portion to highlight it here to the RSF5 designation as well. This is a zoning map that shows some portions of the property as they currently exist. You can see some of the RSF5 on the northern part of the zoning map. And this is an aerial that shows the subject property. As you can see also, this subdivision is separated by a rail line to the adjacent properties to the south, which include additional single family residences. The future land use map does designate the property as a planned development, which is consistent with the master plan. And this exhibit shows the master plan as it exists today, most of which is built out. This portion to the far west here was recently brought into the RSF5 zoning designation. And this portion up here adjacent to Lake Catherine is also currently zoned RSF5. This is the lot exhibit from the previous petition that was submitted on the RSF4, which again, we had some concerns about. The proposed rezoning would eliminate 20 or would reduce the total number of lots in this portion by approximately 20 lots. Staff in review of this petition found that the RSF5 is consistent with the master plan and is consistent with the overall development pattern of the larger Sweetwater subdivision. With that, we're recommending approval of the request to rezone the property to the RSF5 classification.
Thank you, sir. Is the petitioner here, Mr. Lotson?
Yes, sir, he is.
I ask you to come forward, state your name for the record, sir, and you have 20 minutes needed, okay?
Thank you. Name's Neil McKenzie. I'm here on behalf of Sweetwater Investors. This parcel was annexed earlier this year, I think it was in May, came in from the county with the plans of having this, you know, bought in as part of this master plan. The property was annexed, and as Mr. Lotson said, we originally came in and asked for RSF4. We worked with staff and pulled back our application and came back in with RSF5. We feel it's in line, you know, with the current master plan. And I'll just note that we were here recently back in October and had the portion on the westernmost end of the master plan rezoned to RSF5. Those plans are currently approved and about to start construction. You'll notice also another key point to this is this parcel was landlocked. It has no access other than through Sweet order. It's bounded on the south by the rail and then lots on all sides, you know, that abut up to the boundary. So currently the access would be from planned roads inside of Sweetwater. With that, I don't have anything else to add, but glad to ask any questions or glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, sir. Is there a commissioner here? I'd like to ask him a question or staff. Anybody on the computer that's a commissioner has a question for petitioner or staff? Is anybody in the audience here?
I just have one question for Mr. McKenzie. Wayne, yes, Noah, have you met with the current neighborhood association, if there is one, about this new development? And if so, what was the input?
So they've met before. The actual outcome of that, you know, that meeting we can talk about. And then there is a planned meeting tomorrow night as well.
Hi, my name is Brian Wardlaw with Sweetwater Developers. We had a meeting with the HOA when it was previously planned for the RSF4. The community had no problems with the 40-foot lots. We then, though, upon seeing the staff recommendations for the RSF4, we worked with the staff to just bring down the lot sizes to RSF5. And that's been our communications with them, is that the RSF4 was deemed okay by the community. So us improving the lots by making bigger lot sizes, we just move forward from there.
Thank you. I have a Bill and June McMillan on the computer. Please state your name for the record. You have three minutes. Thank you.
This is Bill McMillan. I'm concerned with the traffic. We live at One Clubhouse Drive. That's the corner of Clubhouse and Sweetwater Station. They did a traffic survey or study for what goes out to Abercorn, but the approximately, I'm interpolating down from the 63 units to the 42 as from 600 family trips a day to 400. And with that, including the 118 single family units that are approved, would give us approximately 1,500 trips a day. And during the rush, total peak hour in the evening is 161 in the hour. That's another 2.7 through this intersection every minute for that hour. The traffic is fairly heavy now at this time, and I was just wondering if somebody would take a look at that, if there's anything that governs stop sign intersections and housing developments. Yeah. Thank you. That's my question on it. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Hodson, do you want to take a crack at that, or that would have to probably be somewhat of a traffic study, I'm sure, but.
Mr. Chairman, and the speaker is correct. The applicants did complete a traffic study. I think those findings were specific primarily to the intersection of the entrance road to the Sweetwater subdivision and Highway 204, which is a signalized intersection. Is that correct? It's signalized? Yeah, it is. As to internal stop signs, I think that's probably, these are public roads internally, so that would be something for the city's traffic engineering department to address if they needed to be required.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Anybody else have a question? Is there anyone in the audience? Nobody else on the computer? Do you have anything else you'd like to say, or that's really it? You know,
that's it. Thank you.
Okay, then I'll put it up for a vote. Wants to make a motion?
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
Second.
Ms. Bowles, how do you vote?
Can we see staff's recommendations, please? Sorry about that.
What did you ask for? Staff's recommendation. Would you ask?
Yes, sir. I pulled it up. Staff.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. Lawson.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Go back to the vote. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Travis Coles?
Yes.
Elizabeth Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Joseph Arvin?
Yes.
Ms. Karen Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Jay Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Wayne Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Jeff Nutrica?
Yes.
Mr. Lee Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Dwayne Stevens?
Yes.
Dr. Watkins? Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
And Joe Welch, yes. Motion passes. Thank you. Now we go to item number 7, amended general development plan 2113, 2115, and 2201 Bull Street. Mr. Lotson, take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While I open up a few exhibits here, I want to just talk a little bit about the history of this petition. This is an item that was presented to the Planning Commission, and eventually a general development plan was approved by this body, and an amendment to the text of the zoning ordinance was also approved by the City of Savannah, the mayor and alderman of the City of Savannah, in conjunction with this project. The proposal that's before you today is a proposal to amend that general development plan that was previously approved, initially submitted in 2018. The development site includes 5 parcels bounded generally by Bull Street, Whitaker Street, south of East 37th and West 39th Street. The overall site includes the former Epworth Church, which is located here, an educational building on Bull Street located here. Between West 38th and West 39th Street, an existing surface parking lot located here. The petitioner initially proposed structured parking at that location. And there is also a building north of West 38th Street between Bull Street and DeSoto Avenue, formerly owned by the City of Savannah, which is proposed to be a multifamily residential development at this site. Prior to filing this application, the applicant in October of 2021 requested an updated zoning confirmation letter from the City of Savannah, from the Planning and Urban Design Department. There were a number of things outlined in that letter. Some of the things included information about the site permit, which had been issued on January 15th of 2021, and that was for the site plan that you see before you, as well as the infrastructure, not for vertical construction. And it was also determined in that letter that the review process would include that this development, having been under the previous ordinance when it was originally approved, would continue to be reviewed under that ordinance. And that goes into the text amendment that I mentioned earlier. At the time of this approval, there was an amendment to Article K of the former zoning ordinance that was specific to this development. A number of pieces of additional language were included in that amendment, which included regarding the former Epworth Church, that particular parcel, the principal uses permitted in the CIV district, which was civic under the old ordinance, would apply with a few exceptions, that all TC1 zoning district principal uses, ground and upper floor uses, are permitted. In addition, with the CIV principal uses, in other words, both the uses permitted in both districts would be permitted on that property. The street and rear yard setbacks may be consistent with the street and rear yard setbacks established for the existing building, and that the side yard setback be a minimum of 5 feet. Relative to the proposed changes, which is really going to be a lot of the discussion today because the petitioner is proposing an amended development plan, the primary changes that are visible are the removal of the former educational building and replacing it with this proposed south building, which is multifamily, and the removal of what was going to be structured parking adjacent to the corner of Whitaker Street and 38th Street. That is now proposed to be a surface lot. So this is the previous elevation of the development, which included, as you can see, the existing church, the proposed building that was to stay in multifamily development here, and the proposed north building, which was also a multifamily development. The proposed elevation shows now a separation between the new multifamily building, the demolition of the existing educational building, keeping the former church, and the proposed multifamily building at the north structure. In terms of the approved and proposed development standards, a number of things remain the same. Some things change, and I want to go through those with you here so that the board and the public can understand the nature of the proposed changes. This chart outlines the proposed revisions. The disturbed acreage does not change. However, the number of buildings is decreased by one. The project square feet is reduced slightly from a percentage standpoint by about 4,000 square feet. The building footprint is decreased, and that's mostly due to the redesign of the multifamily building and the elimination of the structured parking on Whitaker and 38th Street. Street frontage remains the same. The number of dwelling units increases by 25. The height of the proposed buildings remains the same, and the total parking is different in total number, but still meets the required number with the removal of the structured parking and replacing it with, and let me show you this. Proposed new general development plan. In this plan, you'll see that there's subsurface parking associated with both of the multifamily buildings. The primary differences are the proposed uses and the demolition of the former school building at 2201 Bull Street, south of the former Epworth Church, which is here. The amended plan would also eliminate the restaurant and retail uses that were proposed and add 25 dwelling units. And considering of the entire review process, the applicant appears to have exhibited that these standards of the ordinance can be met in conjunction with review of the specific development plan. The property did receive a certificate of appropriateness from the City of Savannah. Any amendments to that COA or any new COAs would also have to be approved. And just to go back a little bit before I wrap up, there was some discussion in the pre-meeting about the process for this. Under the previous ordinance, new construction, even something of this significant scale, would not have been reviewed by a board or within a public realm. It would have been reviewed by staff, approved by the city manager. And that was the case with the previous CO, and I'm talking specific to the COA, not the site plan. Because this has been determined to be reviewed under those regulations, MPC staff's understanding is that that process will remain, and that any amendments to a COA would be done by staff, approved by the city manager. So we are working under the previous ordinance in terms of the review process, and based on that, find that this proposed amendment can meet the standards of the requirements of the ordinance. With that, we are recommending approval of the amendments, and just to mention one other thing that got brought up in the pre-meeting. There is an existing approved development plan that's on the books now. The applicant is requesting an amendment to that plan. So this board's purview, as I understand it, is to approve or disapprove the requested amendment or approve an amended plan, for lack of a better way to describe that. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions, open up to the board, Mr. Chairman.
Is the petitioner here?
Yes, sir.
I know he is. If you want to come forward too, sir, make your presentation, state your name for the record, and you have 20 minutes if need be.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for having us here. My name is Michael Roach. I'm a civil engineer with Thomas and Hutton. With me, I also have Travis Stringer from Forum Group, the property owner, as well as Mike Nixon from SGA Architecture, the project architect. I think Mark's did a good job of kind of summing this up, as usual. As he mentioned, the project was first brought before this board and approved back in 2018, the general development plan was. Since then, the project has been retooled. It's seen changes in market conditions. We've also retooled it based off of some feedback received from the neighborhood. Based off of that, and I'll just kind of reiterate what Marcus kind of ran through. We really feel like we've tried to reduce the overall scope of the project. Running through the development standards, our obviously the disturbed acreage hasn't changed at all. We've eliminated one of the buildings that was on the project. The project square feet has been reduced slightly. The footprint, there's been a 20% reduction in the overall building footprint within the project. The street frontage, which I know is always, wanted to activate that street, has been a priority. We've maintained the same street frontage that was approved before. The height is maintaining the same standards that were previously approved and still meeting the same parking requirements. The residential units have gone up as a result of some of the swapping of some of the uses, but, overall, really feel like, we've brought a GDP here that, either reduces scope or, provides minimal changes to that, to what was previously approved. Based off of that, we're excited to see this project getting some legs moving forward again. I know this has been coming for a long time. Really feel like the proposed GDP stays consistent with the previous one and meeting all the requirements of the project. We're not asking for any variances, not requesting any special considerations for this. And ultimately, again, excited to see this move forward, asking for you guys to approve the GDP.
Thank you, sir. Is there any questions to staff or the petitioner from commissioners here?
I have questions.
State your name for the record, please.
Karen Jarrett. So you increased the square footage of the fifth story, even though the fifth story was very controversial to begin with, and now you've taken out one of the buildings and increased the square footage of the fifth story. Is that correct?
I'll let the project architect speak to just the scale of the building and the projects.
And you took away the garage spaces, the area that was going to be kind of the art area.
State your name for the record, sir.
Mike Nixon. I guess I don't know what was approved last time for the arts area, but we are planning on providing art displays and areas on the building itself.
Okay.
As far as the fifth story, I don't know what the fifth story was previously, but the new design sets back on the fifth floor, creating much more reduced scale than the massive building that was there before. That makes
it didn't look like that in your
Hold on, ma'am, please. Thank you.
This is Travis Stringer, the owner of the property and petitioner. To try and answer your questions, for the parking garage, it was, I think, 32, 33 feet big block.
The parking garage isn't what I'm asking about.
No, correct, but I think it applies in the whole scale and mass part of the question. That had drill boxes along it. We've removed that entire building. That was a big issue of the neighborhood, big concern of the neighborhood. There were 98 parking spaces coming out of that entry and exit. For the fifth story scale, the way that this building is shaped in the U shape, we're actually not producing a major increase in that fifth story square footage. The interior middle section, or I guess middle third of it, it's actually set back, forgive me a few feet, but 40 feet from the actual, from Bull Street. So it actually breaks up and appears as two separate buildings visually from the street. The conceptual elevation we showed, we had the same problem the last time we went through with height and mass. It's really difficult to understand and see in a 2D visual where the setbacks are. But what we did was we looked at the north building, the setbacks that we built into that, built the same ones or and or more into this building solely for the purposes of, you know, the recommendations we've got from neighborhood previously when we went through this process, your recommendations as well, so that we can bring the mass of that building down. So we still have the same setback on the upper floors on the south side of the building, which was in relation to not only the property next to us, but to also step it up as you got to the middle and then step it back down.
We're eliminating the event space, correct?
Correct.
That use and is no we have percent. Eliminated all of the garage areas below the residential for artists to rent and use as studios, correct?
Correct. Those artist studio spaces are removed. There were gone. Five of them, I believe.
I'm sorry?
There were five of them. But what we're looking to do as a part of the church building still being worked through is add some of those components.
And we're adding 25 apartments.
Correct. And as a part of that, we removed about 37,000 square feet of office that was previously a part of the project.
Anybody else have a question?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. Mr. Melder.
I would ask the petitioner, even though I'm not sure it's required by the current process you're operating over, but because of the significant changes in the request you're making to amend the COA with the city, I think it would be appropriate for the petitioner to go back to the community to listen to their concerns and make a presentation. I was wondering if the petitioner would be willing to do that, certainly before, if it moved past NPC before it got to city council.
Yes. That's something we obviously did multiple times before. You've already met with the neighborhood board. We've, by their direction, and I guess it's a new thing too in the neighborhood, we've made multiple posts on the Facebook neighborhood chat that has about 1,000 people as a part of it. We've answered questions on there. We were hoping to have, which we told the neighborhood, you know, some more visual renderings for this meeting. We're still working on those. Hopefully we'll have them very, very soon. Our first thing is going to be making a post to the neighborhood chat and share that. And we're open to having a meeting with them as well, following that, taking in their comments.
I think it would be a good idea to have a meeting. And I'll amend something I say. This doesn't go to city council. Actually, it would go to the city manager's office for approval. Thank you.
Anybody else?
This is Mr. Stevens.
Yes, sir.
Hearing that the petitioner is open to the community process, I just wanted to add to the record, I think that it may be appropriate to allow for that process to happen before we, you know, make a determination on this, because if the community comes back with major concerns and we've already given a green light on this, I think it could be, you know, problematic.
I agree with you, sir. I'm going to ask for this to be tabled.
Chairman, can we also see if there's someone here to speak on it today?
Oh yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Robert McCorkle, everybody's
Mr. McCorkle.
I feel like this is a baby I've birthed over the last 5 years. I'm working on this project. I was trying to spare y'all from talking to me today by letting Michael handle it. This is just a GDP amendment, but as far as public input is concerned, from the very beginning of this process back from 2017, we have had numerous public meetings. We've sent copies of everything we're doing to the community in advance of what we're doing. And my client has agreed to do the same. For this purpose today, I know there's discussion about height, discussion about mass,
discussion about uses and what uses are being taken away. None of that, neither height nor mass nor uses, are the subject of what we're here for today. What we're here for today is an amendment to the general development plan, which is a singular piece of paper. And that singular piece of paper shows where our buildings are on the site and what the layout is. The height, the setbacks, the building coverage, all of those things are all in a site-specific zoning that applies to this piece of property. And everything that's on this general development plan meets all of the standards that are applicable to this site without any variances or special requests. And so the COA, on the other hand, does have materials, design, the look of the buildings, those kind of things. It's worth noting that the building on the north side already has a COA. The materials and design and all those other things in the new building are going to be done in a way so that they match essentially and go along with the other building, which already has a COA. But we are committed, as you heard my client say publicly, to having a design charrette or public meeting or however you want to have it to make sure that everybody has a chance to look at the buildings and what they're going to look like before we move forward with our COA through the city manager's office. But today, as far as tabling or having public hearings, I know this GDP was put out on Facebook. It was put out through the MPC's process. Neighbors were notified. In addition, we sent copies of materials and anything that was requested from the Neighborhood Association to the Neighborhood Association in advance of this meeting. All of those things have already happened, but because all we're talking about today is an amendment to a general development plan, this single piece of paper, and we're not talking about elevations or design or materials, I would just encourage, hopefully we can have a vote just on this GDP today with the understanding that we're going to have to move forward on those other items in the fashion we've agreed to.
I can agree with that. I can agree with that, Mr. McCorkle. Is there any other questions from commissioners? We have three people online. I'd like to ask y'all questions. If don't step away yet, because it'll be for the petitioner and possibly for staff. Mr. Jonathan Morgan, I'm going to allow you 3 minutes, and please state your name for the record, sir.
Hello, my name is Jonathan Morgan.
Okay. What's your question?
All right. So I actually, I reside at the property at 38th Street and Whitaker Street. So this is right across from the parking lot that was originally planned to be a multi-story parking garage. And I've been part of this process the whole way through the silly lawsuits back and forth and everything else. And what I want to say is that this project, at this point, I very much am in favor of the project. The reason being is because the 4M group has made the considerations for the neighborhood. They have gotten rid of the parking garage, which totally didn't fit. I mean, we can all agree that it would look better if it was a one story less on the elevations of the buildings, but I'm not the one paying for this project, and it's hard enough to get the financing for it as it is. So doing something at this size and this scale, at this point, I actually am in favor of it as a neighbor. Of course, this is going to make things very different in the neighborhood. It is going to affect parking and affect a lot of other stuff, but we've got bigger problems in the neighborhood as far as, you know, traffic running through at high speed and, you know, some of the other current businesses that are here. So at this point, I actually think this is the best thing we can have for the neighborhood. And before I was very much opposed to it, but now I think they've made the considerations. I feel positive about it. And I don't know, I hope it goes through. So, but if not, I'm afraid of what else could be there if another person came along years later. After the buildings have fallen into more disrepair. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anybody have a question for Mr. Morgan? No. We'll now go to Melissa Memory. Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes, ma'am. Unmute your microphone, please, Ms. Memory.
My name is Melissa Memory. I own and reside in a property at 204 East 40th Street. I have a lot of concerns about this project as well as the process that got us to this point. First, as incorrectly stated in the staff report, there was not the required notice of this meeting posted on the building. The only posting on the site was for a COA for a mural that was from a previous petition, but no notice of this meeting. And also, there was no mention that the previous COA signed by former city manager Roberto Hernandez was only for alterations and additions, not demolition, and stated on the COA that the decision was only valid until October 5th, 2019. If the COA were active as stated by the petitioner, it has not been posted as required by conditions stated in the permit. I further disagree with the staff's report conclusion that there are no material changes in the content from the previous approved development plan. I've enclosed a map which shows that the former Epworth Church building, including the 1949-1960 additions, is listed as a contributing building by the MPC both in 2016. It was actually listed in 2005, but it was on a map prior to the approval of the previous plan, as well as what I accessed from the MPC website last night from updated in 2020. The Secretary of Interior standard states changes to a property that have acquired historic significance in their own right will be retained and preserved. And usually such additions are considered contributing if over 50 years old by MPC preservation staff. Since it is over 50 years old and shows the development of the Upward Church, when and how was it determined not to be contributing, since it's listed as contributing, by whom, and if it's not contributing, why is it still showing as such on the MPC map? And why weren't the very capable MPC historic preservation staff included in the review, as usually happens? If there were redeeming aspects of the prior iteration of this behemoth, there were at least assurances that this development would serve as a community hub. Here's an excerpt from Mr. Stringer's original outreach to the community. Quote, again, we are so excited to see this unique project come to life and are dedicated to incorporating inspirational and community-oriented values into the heart of what we're trying to build, including arts, home for creative artists and diverse cultural events, entrepreneurial spirit, resources for freelancers and small businesses, collaboration, thriving and affordable co-working environments, networking, social and business networking hub, and community leader in strong community partnerships. Another post he gave to the community was it would have shaded and plant lined rooftop, free Wi-Fi, and daily community access from 9 to 5. In essence, a commitment was made that while the building would no longer be a church, it would still serve as a prominent role in the community civic space as it was intended and could continue to justify its monumental scale. The original submittal also included local design teams that have experience in rehabilitating historic structures and new construction that is sympathetic to the Savannah's historic districts. As of last week, Mr. Stringer told the neighborhood that elevations and renderings had not been completed and the use of the building was not yet determined. Mr. Stringer further articulated that he has brought in a new development partner, Equus Partners, that appear to have no experience in historic rehabilitation projects or designing buildings that are of the quality or design standards that we normally expect in Savannah's historic neighborhoods. Excuse me. The submissions include in this position are not what was previously presented and are shockingly bad and of insufficient detail to determine if it is indeed visually compatible, as is a staff review that is supposed to at least suggest due diligence. For any project, this shoddy presentation would be a great concern. However, this project is of this magnitude that will literally by far be the tallest buildings looming over the historic church building, which is the contributing, what remains of the contributing building. Ma'am. And every other contributing building in the neighborhood is quite frankly devastating.
Ma'am, your 3 minutes is up.
Okay. All right. Well, I've submitted the rest of this for the record, but and there's also some exhibits to support.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Melissa Memory?
Did she state
your name for the record, please?
Wayne Noah. Did she state that she submitted something?
Yes, sir. It is attached to the agenda. Package? Yes, sir. It is. We received it this morning, so we attached it.
Can we see it?
Yeah. Oh, there, here we go.
Mr. Travis.
Question for staff. She said that the building proposed to be demolished is on the contributing structure map. Is that true?
I can answer that. I think I can answer that. Let me try. I might have to pull you up here. But so the addition to the church building is on the same parcel with the church. Under the current or on the current map, the contributing buildings are identified by parcel. So because those structures are on the same parcel, it is identified, but only the church is contributing. Did I say that correctly?
Liam Hollick. Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. Usually the whole footprint of a building will either show as contributing or non-contributing. And then if something comes up, we determine which portions are historic and which aren't. And actually, early in this process, the last time we evaluated it and found out it was built in 1949, which is outside the period of significance. So it, for all intents and purposes, under the old ordinance, has to be considered non-contributing.
And it has no no historic significance in 1949.
It has not been evaluated for such because it's outside the period of significance, which again, under the old ordinance, we don't even have the ability to evaluate it.
Okay.
Unlike the new ordinance with the exceptional importance clause.
5 or 10 years as you go through Thomas Square again.
Correct.
You might have the opportunity to evaluate it.
Yep. Now that we have that standard, we'll, as we continue with the streetcar survey, we'll get there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? I'm going to go to Rebecca Fenwick online. Please state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes.
Rebecca Fenwick. I'll be short. New construction in local historic districts are reviewed by local historic preservation commissions. This project is in a local historic district. No matter what the law was then versus what it is now, this is what local historic designation is for, and a review of this project's redesign by the Savannah HPC is the right thing to do. I ask that you please require that this project go back through HPC review to ensure that the design is visually compatible with the local historic district. Thank you.
Any questions from commissioners? I have a Ryan Arve online. Please state your name for the record. 3 minutes max.
Yes, sir. Thank you. My name is Ryan Arve. I'm actually attending this meeting to represent Historic Savannah Foundation on a later item. So I just want to be clear for the record that I'm not speaking on behalf of the organization on this particular item. Just on behalf of myself, but I just want to echo what Ms. Fenwick said and what Ms. Memory said. It is disappointing to learn that this project is going to be evaluated henceforth under the old ordinance. I do believe that it should be reevaluated under the existing ordinance, which would include review by the Historic Preservation Commission. I also want to thank Mr. Melder and Mr. Stevens for their sentiments in regards to more public input. This is not to say that the project didn't have public input, but a project of this size and scale deserves the most scrutiny, and certainly the scrutiny of the experts on the Historic Preservation Commission. I think that it definitely deserves to go through the COA process, not just with staff, though staff is very capable, but through a public input process whereby organizations like HSF and others would have other opportunities to comment on the architecture, height and mass materials, and so forth. So I think there's an opportunity still to do that if you so see fit. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Is anybody else on the computer? Anybody have a question at all, Mr. Arve? Okay. One more. Thank you, sir. Mr. Redmond Fleming, please state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes. Mr. Redmond Fleming, you have 3 minutes, sir. State your name for the record. All right, now we'll go to the audience we have here. Steve Argue. State your name for the record, sir, and you have 3 minutes.
Steve Argue. To put it simply, it's too tall. It's almost 60 feet tall. Also, with the massing that's been shown, you will lose all the live oaks. When you walk down that Bull Street, that's going to change the neighborhood, the character of it considerably, and for the worse. Thank you.
Any questions for this gentleman from commissioners? On the computer? Nope. Next is Michelle Stevens. Please state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes.
Michelle Stevens. I was on the Thomas Square Neighborhood Association when this first started ages ago. My biggest issue right now, and this is more of a big picture, if something got approved way back in 2018, how long are you guys going to grandfather things in? We've had the new zone and things have changed and the city manager's changed. In fact, he was here when that was approved and he was in the building, which I thought was weird because I used to come to these meetings all the time, but of course he couldn't vote. I'm just trying to figure out, are there other things on the docket or upcoming new business or old business that you are letting grandfathered in? That's one thing. Secondly, the whole idea of what the community was going to be, the plaza, the green space on the roof, those were some of the things that I liked, and that's not here anymore. I do think we need more housing. I'm not totally against all of it, but it's so much of it has changed. And I know that they're saying they're just one improvement on the site development plan or the GDP or whatever. It has changed significantly. Basically, it was going to be a performance venue, co-working space, community center, and now it's residential that probably gets sold to SCAD in a couple of years. Like, that's my issue with it. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, ma'am. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Stevens? Thank you. Next is Mr. Mike Nixon. No, no wish to come forward. Okay. Do we have anybody else on the computer? Mr. Fleming's not there. Okay. Do we have any discussion? Nope. Yes, Ms. Jarrett.
I do have concerns that we have changed the project considerably and the public has not had an opportunity to weigh in on the changes that are here. I'd like to see more public involvement.
This is Mr. Stevens. I share Ms. Jarrett's sentiments.
Okay, sir. Would somebody like to make a motion?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, me. Comment.
Mr. McCorkle, you have a chance to rebut. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Question, oh, Mr. Chairman. Jay Melder, I agree with the sentiment for more public engagement on the changes. I will say, and just because a lot of been talked about Nuzo, and I think we should applaud Nuzo and the things that Nuzo creates, like a Historic Preservation Commission, though. You know, I don't necessarily think this project was grandfathered in. It's actively permitted under that old ordinance. And I question this board's ability to change that process. I would like to be clear on that if that was something that we sought. So I completely understand the sentiments of a Historic Preservation Commission review, completely understand the sentiments of a review of a COA. But I want to make sure that we're doing this under the ordinance. And right now, that ordinance states that this property can continue to move forward because it has an active permit, and that the city will review an amended COA. The petitioner has agreed to a public process for the changes, and city staff will review those amended COA changes and work with the community and the developer to sign off on something that's suitable. I want to say that we all applaud NUZO and the historic preservation community, but I'm asking that question because I'm not sure this board can change that process.
Chairman, I believe Mr. Noah, I share his sentiments.
I do too. And we can change that process. Mr. McCorkle?
Briefly, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I agree with the city manager's sentiments. He's ultimately getting an idea of vested rights. And the reason that the COA continues, the reason that all these things continue is because we do have active permits on the site, including a site demolition permit that would have included tearing down the building. There have been changes that have occurred over the process from when this was originally done, changes to the COA, changes, small changes we've worked with staff with over this time. At the end of the day, what we're here to talk about today is the sheet that's in front of you on the screen. There is no plan that we could present before you today that would not have some public comment and some people who do not like our project. Everyone on this board knows very well that there are individuals who do not like this project. They do not like the height of it. You heard about height. You heard about parking problems. You heard about the mass. You heard about the materials. It's inappropriate. It's going to be devastating. It needs, you know, all these things. And some of the same individuals that are making the comments today also sued us. They also sued all of you. Well, not everyone was on the board at that time, but if you recall, if you were sitting on this board at this time, you were sued, named personally in a lawsuit by the neighbors over this, as were all of the members of city council, including the city manager. And I believe the county was actually named in a lawsuit for some strange reason. And we went through that process, and that lawsuit was thrown out for being completely invalid and was dismissed. And in addition to that, the people that brought the lawsuit were forced to pay my and my client's attorney's fees because it was so outrageous that we were named in it and the manner in which it was done that outside of what is ordinary happens in the state of Georgia, they had to pay our attorney's fees for going through the process. We have been through this a lot, and the 58 feet of height, the setbacks, all of the building coverage, all of those things are codified in the zoning ordinance on a site-specific zoning for this site. They can't be changed by this general development plan. They can't be changed by the people that are sitting on the MPC commission unless there is a rezoning of our site, which is not what we're here for today. We're also not here for a COA to ask if our materials and if the buildings look right like they should look. All we're here for today is building footprints and where our exits and entrances are in a general development plan. The primary criteria of a general development plan is, does it meet the design criteria of the zoning ordinance? And this one does. Staff's recommended approval. And again, we're not seeking a variance or asking for you to shrink our setbacks or give us a little more height here or there or any of the things that we could be asking for. We meet the zoning that applies to this site. We're just simply asking, as happens all the time, to amend our general development plan so that we can move forward with our project, get our project built. And so I just hope that you would take all that into consideration and support staff's recommendation for approval.
Thank you, sir. So I'm looking for a motion.
Move to deny the application.
Is there a second on that?
Second, Bowles.
Go to a vote. Ms. Bowles?
Deny.
Mr. Travis Coles?
Just for clarity, I'm voting no on the motion.
Ms. Epstein?
No on the motion to not approve. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. No.
Mr. Irvin?
You guys kind of got me confused. I'm voting against the motion that's put on the table right now. So I guess I'm voting no for the motion.
You're voting no for the motion.
That's correct.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. J. Melder?
No to the motion to deny.
Mr. Wayne Noah?
No to the motion.
Mr. Notrika?
No to the motion.
Mr. Lee Smith?
No.
Sir?
No.
Mr. Dwayne Stevens?
Oh, sorry about that one. No.
Dr. Watkins? Mr. Wildwoody?
No.
And Mr. Welch, no to the motion. No to the motion passes.
New motion.
A new motion, Mr. Chairman.
I need a new motion.
Okay.
Motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Second, Noah.
So the vote now is to vote yay or nay for the staff's recommendation. Ms. Bowles?
No.
Mr. Travis Coles?
Yes.
Mrs. Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Joseph Urban?
Yes.
Ms. Karen Jarrett?
No.
Mr. J. Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Wayne Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Jeff Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Lee Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Dwayne Stevens?
No.
Mr. Tom Wildwoody?
Yes.
Mr. Joe Welch, yes. Motion passes. Thank you. Thank you all for coming. Next is item number 8, special use permit, 527 East 39th Street. Restaurant with on-site alcohol consumption.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and board members, commissioners, Melissa Leto, MPC staff. The petitioner is requesting approval of a special use pursuant to section 3.10 of the Savannah Zoning Ordinance to establish a restaurant with on-site consumption of alcohol. The subject property is located at 527 East 39th Street on the south side of 39th Street between Price and East Broad Street. The parcel is 2,760 square feet in size and was developed with a single family residence built in 1920. Prior to the update of the zoning ordinance in 2019, the property was zoned BN, neighborhood business. However, the subject building was always used as a residence. The parcel is now part of a planned development called East Broad Market Plan Development. The original plan development included 9 separate parcels comprising approximately 1.6 acres. There was a rezoning of the subject parcel from BN neighborhood business and R4 for family residential to the East Broad Market plan development in 2010. In 2019, the petitioner amended the PD to allow for a microbrewery as a permitted use. And that would be the Hopatomica right here. And then this parcel here is the subject parcel for today's item. On June 8, 2021, the petitioner requested and was approved to include the subject parcel 527 East 39th Street as part of the East Broad Market plan development. At the time, the City Council approved the inclusion of 527 East 39th Street into the plan development. They included a condition within the ordinance. The condition states, whereas the parcel identified as 527 East 39th Street must secure a special use permit as provided in section 3.10 for all uses permitted in the mixed use district. The special use permit shall not be transferable. Residential shall be exempt from this requirement. And we are here today to discuss the special use request for this subject parcel. Staff finds the location of the special use request is compatible with the character of the subject property's neighborhood. Restaurant use at this location is consistent with the future land use designation. Here is their proposed floor plan for the residence structure. In regards to hours of operation, the petitioner has spoken to the Baldwin Park Neighborhood Association and recommended hours are Sunday through Thursday, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Friday and Saturday, 7 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. Trash pickup mitigation. They will be using a rolling trash bin from the adjacent establishment at Hopatomica, and the trash will be picked up 3 times weekly. And regarding to parking, I would say that the per section 9.3.7D, for the first 3,000 square feet of any non-residential use, there shall be no minimum off-street parking space requirement. For square footage exceeding 3,000 square feet, the parking requirement shall be calculated. So the interior space of the subject building is 1,300 square feet, with 800 square feet dedicated to consumption area for the proposed seats. The petitioner received a letter of support from the Neighborhood Association and further hosted a neighborhood meeting last night at the subject property's adjacent neighbor, Hopatomica. I was in attendance and there were many locals that were interested in having this establishment as the one proposed today in their neighborhood. In review of the identified criteria for considering a special use, staff finds that the subject property and proposed use meets the requirements. Staff recommends approval of the request with the conditions that are underlined. Although their agent is here as well as the petitioner, there is a sale that's being transferred of the property, whereas the property owner applied for the special use, but in fact, the people that are going to be utilizing the special use are and contingent with this approval will be purchasing the property. So the condition of the special use permit shall be non-transferable is something that might need to be reworded out. But the agent and the petitioner are here to answer any questions as well as I.
Thank you. I'll ask the petitioner if he wishes to come forward. Have 20 minutes if needed. Mr. Yellen, how are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you doing today? And hope for that. I will not take up full 20 minutes.
We appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'm excited about this petition. It's been a very well-received special use application. I have with me both the property owner, Mr. Isaacson, along with Natasha Gaskell and Matthew Parmalee, who are the proposed operators and perhaps future owners of the site. We've gone out and they've gone out and done an incredible amount of due diligence and neighborhood outreach in terms of this special use. It went back, it was here before you, I should say, last year when it was brought into the PD. When it went to City Council, this condition was put in on it that any new commercial use, but specifically a restaurant use, would follow the same special use approval as you have in the Mid-City District. And so we're going through that process. Attached to your application, you'll see that there were probably 25 to 30 letters of support in favor of this application. As Ms. Leto mentioned, we met with the Neighborhood Association again last night. Everyone was in favor of this petition. It will be for what we're calling an all-day cafe, a bakery by day, and then a limited restaurant by night. It's about 800 square feet on the inside, so not too big of a structure. That's not too intrusive, but really trying to create something community-oriented for Baldwin Park, and we had the full support of the neighborhood. Everyone was excited to have this user come in. But as Ms. Leto was mentioning, just want to clarify and perhaps something, if you vote to approve as recommended by staff, that we can clarify with staff and city manager as we go forward, that current owner of the property might sell the property to the restaurant operators. And we just want to make sure that we're all working together right now and want to make sure that was not the intent of the ban on the transferability. We're all in the same room. We understand the concern if it was a future owner and we immediately flipped it to some restaurant that you had never encountered before, that would be problematic, but that's not our intent here. And we do think we have a great project. And other than that condition, applicant is willing and able to abide by the conditions as recommended by staff. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there any questions to Mr. Yellen or the petitioner from commissioners?
Tom Wywoody.
Yes, sir, Tom. State your name for the record.
Transferability of the approval, it kind of creates a little bit of problem with approving it with the current owner. And then, alarm is going off. Approves it with the current owner, and then it transfers to the new owner, which negates the whole transferability issue. So I think we need to put something in there that says it's transferable to the current pending contract owner.
And
perhaps, I don't know, but
we'll address that.
Say it's non-transferable, and then we approve it today, it's non-transferable.
And I think, Mr. Wywoody, I think staff is certainly amenable to working with city staff as we develop the language that will be heard by the council. We can either, with the manager's permission, eliminate that requirement or place a 90-day time frame post adoption, should this be approved by council, to give them the opportunity to transfer the license to the operator within that time frame. There's probably a number of ways we can go about it, but I don't believe we have any issue with some way to transfer from the current owner to the operator, the future owner.
Somebody,
Mr. Jay Melder?
Or nine, oh, or us.
Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, Jay Melder, I do too have a concern about the non-transfer here and the sale price. I know that was the ownership of this parcel was a big reason why city council put this into the PD. I see no issue with staff recommendation here. I see no issue with the use, and certainly commend the developers and the petitioners for working with the community and bringing something that the community wants. So I'm fine for staff, both from the city and the MPC, to work that out before it gets to city council, but that will have to be something that we work out, because non-transferability is actually now a boilerplate for all of the special use permits that we're putting through city council.
Yes, sir.
And we don't want to make a special case that becomes a special case forever. So we would really have to be clear about, you know, the language would have to be would have to name the new owner, potential new owner, and non-transferable from that ownership group. And we'd have to have some commitment from the community that they were fine with that as well.
Understood. We can handle that between this meeting and the council meeting.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Any other questions? Yes, Travis.
I was just going to make a recommendation that you add the operators' names to the petition so that everybody is on the same petition, and it would still remain non-transferable at that point.
And whether that needs to happen now or before we go to city council, that's a great suggestion.
Okay.
I would be fine just as long as it happens before we agendize it for city council. And I would also note that the other conditions that staff recommended would be part of that too.
Yes, sir. Okay. Duly noted. Anybody on the computer have a question? Raise your hand if you have a question on this item. On your computer, please. Nope. Mr. Isaacson, did you want to say anything? I know I got a blue card.
No, just in case you had questions.
Okay. Does anybody in the audience on this item wishes to ask? Okay. With that, I guess we'll go to a vote.
Coles, I'd like to make a motion.
Yes, sir.
Make a motion that we approve the staff's recommendation with the conditions. And I'm not quite sure, should we make the recommendation that the operators are added to this petition, since it's a recommendation to council?
If you're looking, this is Jay Melder, I would say that with the condition that the petitioner and the potential owner work with MPC and city staff to create the right type of condition before this special use gets to city council.
Okay, so let me clarify that.
To clarify non-transferability.
Right. So my motion is to approve the staff's recommendation to include the conditions that the staff of MPC works with the petitioner, who is the owner and will eventually be the operator as well, before it goes to city council, and to also include include non-transferability and items 2 and 3.
Noah, second.
Okay, we'll go to a vote. Ms. Maureen Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Travis Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Elizabeth Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Joseph Urban?
Yes.
Ms. Karen Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Jay Melder?
Yes.
Dwayne Noah?
Yes.
Jeff Matrika? Lee Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Dwayne Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Tom Woodwoody?
Yes.
And Mr. Welch? Yes. Motion passes. Thank you. I'm going to ask Mr. Notrika to recuse himself from this next item because he is a property owner. He may sit in the audience and even ask a question if he wishes. Item number 9, text amendment, Victorian Historic District, section 7-9.
Mr. Chairman, point of order. Could I, based on the conversations at the pre-meeting, could I make a motion to table this item so that staff can work out any notification or HPC review based on the new ordinances before this gets presented to MPC?
Second. Yes, sir.
I second that. Mrs. Stevens?
Yes, let me ask, is there anybody in the audience here that wishes to speak on it? Yes, sir. Hold on just a minute, my friend.
Tommy Dennis.
Thank you very much. Mr. Danos, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
State your name for the
record. My name is Tommy Danos. Wanted to speak just, I was here for the pre-meeting. I heard what y'all said about tabling it. I agree 100%. When you table it, that means you're typically going to bring it up at the next meeting. Are we sure we're going to have notification to all property owners by the next meeting?
You will, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And Mr. John Brown? Y'all can flip a coin, huh? I'm sorry.
He has to allow Mr. Guthrie to speak before him.
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Guthrie. That's fine. I couldn't hear him. How you doing, sir? You have 3 minutes. State your name for the record, Mr. Guthrie.
My name is Gary Guthrie. If this is being tabled, it might be a moot point. So, but okay. Anyway, our period of significance in the neighborhood is sometime in the late 1800s to the late 1920s. About 7 or 8 years ago, the historic planner brought a National Historic Preservation Group to review the Victorian district, especially because structures on the lanes were not included in the original historic designation. They were also asked about extending the period of significance in the district. The national group recommended keeping the current period of significance, or possibly extending a couple years, because there were two structures that were just outside of that that were actually appropriate. And then approximately 2 years ago, a local group approached the Victorian neighborhood about adding additional structures to the protected list. They presented a list that included those that are being talked about today. Only two on that list received majority support from the neighborhood, and they're the same two that were just barely outside of the period of appropriateness. That's 805 Whitaker Street and 1111 Bull Street. And those are the ones they considered. The others, except for the Telfair Hospital, which I don't know why it's on the list because it's already in that period. So, but everything else were not considered significant to the neighborhood. And we did not want to include those in the because they're not anywhere near the Victorian era. And despite twice being rejected by the National Preservation Group and the neighborhood, the Historic Planning Commission is still trying to add these mid-century structures to be protected on the protected list. And I don't think it should be allowed to go this way. There's potential where these properties exist for something much more appropriate architecturally to be built in the future, something something like the Wuhan Law Office, which is existing on Park and Bull Street, and it was only built a few years ago. And I only found out about this whole issue on Saturday, and I'm involved in the neighborhood, and I only because I ran into our neighborhood president did he tell me this came up. So this is not something that the neighborhood knows about that is even happening at this point. So I think it needs to be brought up to the neighborhood, and we need to discuss it before any of these are added on to our protected list.
Couldn't agree with you more, sir. Anybody have a question for this gentleman? Okay. Yeah. Thank you, sir, and I welcome you to come back. Also, do you have a question, Mr. Smith?
Yes. I appreciate the motion because 3.16.7 of the NUZO amendments to contributing resource map, if you go to, let's see, D and then I, public hearing, public notice, these things do have to go to historic preservation. You look further down, there has to be involvement public. So let's just make sure we do that. So I appreciate the motion. You know.
Thank you. Mr. Brown, do you want to come forward? You have 3 minutes, sir.
Just wanted to verify I agree with Mr. Guthrie. We spent quite a bit of time reviewing these buildings. How long ago, Gary?
Two years.
And we only approved two of them to be put on a protected list. And so we think that the neighborhood should be notified about this if we want to change anything. But how many other were there all together? About eight buildings. Five of them we did not think were significant enough to preserve.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions for this gentleman?
With the tabling, well, for the board, is the tabling date certain or until staff comes back with something?
I got one more question. One more, and we'll get to that discussion.
All right, great.
Please.
Thank you.
Mr. Ryan Arve, you're online, sir. You have 3 minutes. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ryan Arve on behalf of Historic Savannah Foundation. Our Architectural Review Committee has looked over the list of potential properties within this text amendment and are in favor of it. Just wanted to go on record now and will go on record in the future when the opportunity arises to advocate for the inclusion of these buildings, and would just say that the Victorian era in America, technically, by most accounts, ended around the turn of the 20th century, and yet the period of significance extends beyond that. We feel this is appropriate. We feel it is appropriate to include mid-century architecture, not because they are akin to Victorian architecture, but by virtue of their location within this district, they do deserve protection. It's quite ironic because in the mid-century, in the middle of the 20th century, Victorian buildings were seen as disposable, not significant, not worthy of preservation. And we lost a lot of great architecture in this country because those people in the 1950s and 60s were not far enough removed from that architecture to appreciate them. And here we find ourselves now some 50, 60 years from the time that some of these buildings were built, making some of the same short-sighted arguments. And we cannot have gaps in the physical record of Savannah, our built environment. We cannot have holes in the records because we didn't think a building was fit some arbitrary period of significance. And we as an organization do believe that these buildings are worthy of saving, whether they appeal to you or not architecturally, academically. They have been recognized as being significant, though there might be some disagreement out there, though there might be some difference of opinion. It is not for one person or even a neighborhood association to decide, and we're in favor of it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for this gentleman? Okay. Anybody else in the audience? Nope. Nobody else on the computer. Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to open. Ma'am? Somebody just raised their hand. One more. See, you don't ever know who's listening, right? Mr. Cody Jones, you have 3 minutes. State your name for the record, sir.
Yes, sir. My name is Cody Jones. I'm the Governmental Affairs Director for the Savannah Area Realtors. I just wanted to say that our associations received a couple of calls from property owners and some of our members in regards to this. And similar to what's been said by some other people in regard to just more notice and more time being given, our association would be very much in support of y'all tabling this motion at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay, do we want to open this for some discussion?
Travis Coles, the one part of discussion that I would have is, I'm curious, like, is it appropriate to be voting on all of these as a collective? Because I think that there is a lot of disagreement over which of these properties should and which of these properties shouldn't. So I'm wondering if these should be taken individually or as a grouping, and it's just kind of thinking out loud, but good I think question.
I'm happy to answer that, Liam Hollick. Like, you can do it however you like. Yep. If there's some that you know, whoever makes the motion at that time feels that don't meet the criteria for exceptional importance, that, yep.
But we should be aware that exceptional importance is what we're looking for, not whether we like that building or don't like that building.
Exactly. I don't think we're the ones to make that call.
Chair Noah.
Yeah, Mr. Wayne Noah.
My concern is that we are, in essence, picking and choosing. And I'm not saying a person is picking and choosing or a group. What I'm saying is we have this district, and it was stated in the pre-meeting that this is just a small percentage of what might come before this board. And I'm not suggesting, but I am questioning whether or not they should be done as a whole after the entire survey is done, or if we pick them at every 10, or we pick them in a block section, or there's got to be rhyme or reason. Otherwise, I feel that it could be discrimination toward a property owner. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Bill Urban here.
Sorry.
Bill Urban here. Mr. Urban. I would like to echo Mr. Noah's position. I don't think that we stand in a position to determine what is of exceptional importance. I think I heard Ms. Jarrett say that as well. I think if we're going to do something, let it be comprehensive based on whatever criteria determine exceptional importance to be, and then bring it to us as opposed to piecemealing it. I think it should be done at one time. I was not in favor of tabling this for additional notice to other homeowners, but if we're going to go full tilt, let's go full tilt. Let's not do it halfway. Let's go all the way. And if we're going to notify all parties, let's look at the entire kitten and caboodle, as I would say. That's my recommendation.
This is Mr. Stevens. I'd like to chime in and speak towards that. Though I completely understand and agree that we shouldn't pick and choose. However, I want to push back a little bit, because we've just recently lost a church that very much should have been considered and deemed historic. And that could have very well been prevented had we been able to, in a sense, ad hoc some of these historic resources. Again, we've been in a position where we've been in a threatened state from losing our designation. And, you know, I think we are out of the clear of that, but to avoid going back into that, perhaps language should state after X a number of resources have been surveyed, then we could make a motion or make a text amendment. But to do a comprehensive, at what point where's the stopping point? Is my question. You know, having been an intern at MPC years ago, I myself surveyed district. And it is a laborious and cumbersome task, and it takes a great deal of time. So I kind of urge everybody, I understand your position, but I also want to urge everyone to consider what that language looks like to make sure that we don't lose historic resources, historic assets, due to our desire to have a comprehensive when a comprehensive may never really be achieved if we're regularly surveying.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Jarrett?
First, I'd like to say it sounded to me like Ms. Mihalik was saying that these were chosen because they were close to Forsyth Park, which is one of the most desired locations of Savannans that I know of. So, you know, there must be something about the park that makes them want to go there. And looking at the buildings in the vicinity of the park, as well as along Bull Street, which is actively being developed, is an important place to look. But in addition to that, you know, if we don't want to bring them all, if we want to wait and bring them all together at once, do we want a moratorium to keep people from tearing down the ones that exist?
Can I respond, please, sir?
Go ahead, Mr. Noah.
I was not stating that we should wait till every property. I did state that we could do an area, but if you look at the map, it appeared to me that it was picking and choosing if we could do the entire district. That's all I'm asking.
Mr. Wellwoody?
We were several years ago, we were brought a text amendment that would have affected 15,000 property owners, and there was no notice mechanism for anybody to know that these changes would take place. And that fortunately did not pass, that text amendment. What I see, this was brought up when we were doing NewsO, that we have notice requirements for individual properties and individual property owners. But when there is a text amendment that will affect a lot of people, there is no statutory notification that I'm aware of. And I think you confirmed there was no real notice. Certainly there are notices that we can post. And I don't know that this is really, this may be a bigger fish to fry beyond this issue here, but it seems to me that when we have a text amendment that affects a multitude of property owners with no real notification requirement, that maybe we need to look at that notification requirement so we can get more involvement in the process.
Are we talking about text amendments for zoning too?
Text amendments, just text amendments in general.
I agree.
Right. And so perhaps the people before us, and I, you know, we stand on their shoulders, right? Their wisdom are the reasons why we don't have these notifications that I'm not aware of. But it seems to me, as a realtor and someone who advocates for property rights and individual property rights, that notice is something that's required in this situation that we're not getting. So that's just one-on-one.
Further agree. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, and I'll add too to the discussion about demolition, because it's very important. The city of Savannah just recently last week changed its policy for demolition and is requesting the same information that MPC would for any building that's being requested to demo in a historic district, a COA for that demo. So we are trying to put more protections in place not to lose our assets, our historic assets to demolition, because that's incredibly important.
Thank you, Mr. Melder.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I would just like to say also that we survey based on the funds that we have. And again, this was the first phase, but I will sit down with staff and we will go over what the total cost would be to survey the entire district. What would it cost to do a second phase of the survey, and then come up with a little bit more specific process that has dollars attached to it so that we could have a little bit more comprehensive survey.
Thank you. And I know we do have a budget for advertising and sending out notices to residents. This gentleman over here asked, can we promise him they'll get a notice? We need to do that. Okay. Mr. Lotson, when do you think this could be brought back to us? You got any idea?
Mr. Chairman, I'd say that the the advertising piece really is what we're probably going to ask the board direction on, because, and here's why. Okay. Mr. Wildwoody's point regarding notices for a text amendment. You know, we did, as you mentioned, go through this, have this whole conversation associated with the new zoning ordinance. Whenever you change the language in the ordinance, it could affect some properties more than others, but it's really, in a lot of cases, has an effect citywide. So if I change a section in the ordinance, that really affects anybody who owns property or wants to do business in Savannah. So who do I notice? In the case of this petition we're hearing, discussing today, you've got, I presume, thousands of properties in the Victorian district, fewer that are specifically part of this request, this amendment. We're talking about 11 properties in particular about a change, but there are other historic properties that at some point, depending on what the outcome of the comments that Ms. Wilson just made, we're going to be continuing to review properties within this district, and it is a process, and it's really probably, without a huge staff and a huge budget, no way to do it quickly. So I think when we've reviewed these districts in the past, we have done it in phases, and I think we're doing that now. And so then the staff will bring recommendations to this board. And in this case, we say we pick these 11 buildings in this phase. These are the ones that we think are exceptional and significant, and we want you to review those and give your opinions. But keep in mind, it is an amendment to the ordinance. So you do have the authority to say, okay, we agree with staff on this, this, and this, but we disagree on this, this, and this as a board. And whatever that ends up being is what we'll take to city council and say, this is the MPC's position on our recommendation. So with that said, I think what we need to understand from the board is what you'd like to see from a notice standpoint between now and when we bring this back, whether it's the next meeting or the meeting after that. But we can turn that around, whatever it is, but we don't necessarily want to send a notice to every person in the city or really every person in the Victorian district. So,
well, in addition to that as well, generally the city, once we make our recommendation, the city clerk and staff are the ones that generally send the notices. They advertise it and they do those types of things. Yes, I've got a budget for doing some notification, but it's a very small budget. If we have to start noticing everybody, that budget is gonna probably be tripled with regards to dealing with notice. So I think it's a valid point. It's one that I think when I first got here, I raised with regards to even approaching NUZO, and we can continue to have conversation with the both the city and the county about noticing and whether, you know, kind of where that happens. But for now, we will come up with the process with regards to notice. We will definitely at least do what you all instruct us to do regarding noticing for this particular text amendment, but we do need to have a clear process that so that we're treating everybody the same.
This is Mr. Stevens. I just want to contribute a comment. We've run into these issues when I served as the chair on the HDBR, and hearing Ms. Wilson's position on budget for the notices and the amount of notices that may be required. I don't know if this is feasible at all, but I want to throw it out there to see if this is something that we can take into consideration and work. And that is working with realtors across our area, working with the Realtor Association in our community to have them work as a partner and inform purchasers of properties in areas that have historic significance and or are deemed a historic district of the ramifications and the things that they may encounter as they, you know, once they're the owner of these properties. And perhaps that could be a potential solution to resolve that. But I just wanted to, you know, submit that comment for the record for consideration.
That's a good idea.
And as a reminder, what we did for NUZO was we sent notices out in people's water bills, and we used other resources that we had in order to let people know what some of those changes are. In this case, it's a little tad different in that there are two questions. One is, at what point during the survey process do we move things forward? And if we're going to do that in phases based on what we've got from a budget, because even doing the surveys, there's a cost associated with that. Then the other piece is basically dealing with how it is noticed and whether you go above and beyond what the state law has in place. And if so, how much and what would that be? So I do think that it warrants some additional discussion. I don't know if we're going to solve it right now because it's a complicated one, but it's one that I'll definitely make sure that I reach out and talk with the city manager about in more detail and the attorneys.
Mr. Chair, it would be my view that we may need a long, we may need to figure out the right process for this, but for this issue, it's 11 properties.
Yes, sir.
About the same block, and I think that we can probably manage a proper notification there.
Yes, sir. I agree. Can't take any questions from the audience. I'm sorry. Mr. Woodwoody?
Yeah, you know, we in real estate, we already have a lot of different notice requirements. Foreclosure goes in the newspaper. Everybody knows that you pick up the newspaper, you get a foreclosure. There's lots of public notices on the paper of record, which is done online now in paper form. There's a lot of ways to do a mass notice beyond sending things in an individual envelope to every participant or every property owner. So I think it's not as hard as we're making it, but it is.
Right.
There's lots of venues to do that.
I agree. Yes, sir, Mr.
This is Travis Coles, and I would say at the very minimum, the people who own this property should be noticed. I think sending 11 letters is probably within our budget to do. We don't have to send it to everybody. And it doesn't even have to be until we're getting to this point, but they should know before we get to this meeting. So the folks that are being surveyed don't need to know necessarily if they're not going to experience any changes, but the property owners who are really should get a letter.
And they will share it with their neighbor and it'll come together. Okay.
Well, I believe we can cover that, Mr. Chairman, to answer your earlier question, but before the next meeting. And bring this back at the next meeting.
So just so I'm clear, Liam Hollick, that is going to be the notification requirement for this is letters directly to the 11 property owners.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
What it says about as far as HPC and just follow that section plus notification. That's how I understand it.
We're back to the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I motion to table this item till a date certain. What was that date? March 1st.
Poll second.
Okay. We'll take a verbal vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone against? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. And there's no other business. No presentations. Wish all y'all a very healthy, safe week.
Can I just thank MPC staff for giving us the computers.
Thank you for the laptops.
Thank you for the computer, laptops, and thank you for your hard work.
They're not working yet. There's still a missing.
Motion adjourned.